But speaking of the amazing Zayn Aguilar, there he is. There he is. Yeah, on the slightly less confident scale would be, well, there's, no, Everin did okay. Everin's good. We're not gonna show Daniel. No, it's kind of embarrassing. Tao did okay. Yeah. Sorry. Possibly. Alright, and, I don't know how Monica, we miss Monica, she was there. I'm glad that Monica mentioned the midweek on Wednesday, not because she said I did such a good job, but that's nice, I guess. And as you all know, my love language is words of affirmation, but that's not why. That's not why. The reason is it was so cool having our midweek on campus. I don't know. It was just a really awesome feeling. And we had, what, six people there, you know. But it's just the beginning of something because we now have an actual presence in a room, yeah, on campus. I'm guessing you guys aren't going to come down. Actually, you know what? We didn't put it online. Okay. So we will figure out a way to put it online in future Wednesday so people can come to our midweek. Cause I'm a bit of a push for you guys to come an hour and a half each way for midweek. Although Jan and I used to do that in Milwaukee. We did that for 7 years. We were a little crazy, but all right, anyway. So, there's that. Now we're continuing. We have two more sermons from Hebrews and we're starting to wrap it up actually. And, you know, we've seen the reasons that Jesus is amazing. The reason that Christianity is real Christianity is so much superior to any other religion ever created by human beings. I'm writing a book, by the way. I'm getting close to finishing it. It's on the Christian worldview. And so I'm discussing different views of the world, pantheism and atheism and naturalism and Islamic theism and deism and dualism and polytheism. And as I look into that, I realize how different, number one, Christianity is from all other worldviews and how much better it is. But now we're at the point in Hebrews where it's going to be exhortation, exhortation, exhortation. All right? We finished Jesus is great, Christianity is great because of this, greater covenant, greater sacrifices, greater tabernacle, greater than Moses, greater than all the prophets, etc. So we're now in our exhortation. In fact, the title of my sermon is Hebrews 10 and 12, Final Exhortations. Now, don't take that too literally because we have one more sermon coming. At least I think so. I think I have enough material for one more sermon. So our exhortations were pay attention, okay? Don't stop. Don't rest. Make every effort and move on to maturity. And then there was last week, which is the greatest exhortation in the entire book of Hebrews, which was? Draw near to God. No. Last week's sermon, it was not draw near to God. Living by faith. Yes, walk by faith or live by faith. All right, so now we're going to do a whole series of exhortations. Let's pick it up. So we're going to go back and do the second half of chapter 10, because we skipped forward to chapter 11. And then we'll do the first half of chapter 12 today. That's the material for our sermon is the last half of Hebrews chapter 10, or part of it, and then first part of Hebrews chapter 12. So please, with me, read together Hebrews 10, 19 through 22. Therefore, all right? And whenever you have a therefore, you ask, therefore what? Right? In other words, because of this. Right? And there's a lot of therefores in Hebrews. The reason is there's a lot of becauses, a lot of reasons. Therefore, because Jesus gave us a better covenant, therefore, but Jesus, because Jesus lives in the real tabernacle, the heavenly one making intercession for us, because Jesus offers greater sacrifice. That's the therefore. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain that is his body, and since we have a great high priest over the house of God, here we go. Let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Very good, Zane, knowing that that's one of the admonitions, but we hadn't gotten to that one yet. So admonition number one is to draw near to God. Because we have these great things, because we have this access, because of this, we have full assurance, right? Full assurance of our faith. We can have confidence. And think about this. All right, you were driving through Washington, D.C., and you thought, you know what, I feel like I just want to talk to the president right now. So you pull your car over, get out of the street, kind of walk through the gate, walk past everybody, walk in the front door and say, where's the Oval Office? All right. And you just kind of walk, hey, Prez, what's happening? You know? Yeah. You think that's going to work?
Never.
Why not? Because he or she, happens to be he right now, it's going to be a she eventually, because he's the president. You don't just walk in like, hey, I'm here. You don't do that. And the Jews definitely didn't do that. Yeah. Remember the whole thing, you know, if you went behind the curtain, blitzed, you know, they tied a rope around their ankle. I don't know about you, but I love Hebrews 10:19. Yeah. Think about it. We can walk boldly, confidently. Not into the Oval Office, but into the presence of God. I've got a question for you. Did you do that this morning? I hope so. Now, I mean, it's not realistic to think that every day we will walk in like, this is so amazing. You know, the first time I walked into the Sistine Chapel, we got lucky. We were the first tour group of the day, and I walked really fast as all this stuff because I knew it was going. And when, I think this might be the second time, I think when I went with you, and we walked in, we were literally, it was the guards there and us. It was so cool. It was so cool. But you know what? I have a feeling if I worked in the Sistine Chapel every day, after a while I'd be like, yeah, whatever, you know. Yeah, it's a little thing with the finger, and you know, it's no big deal. So I don't think it's a reasonable goal that every day we'd be like, wow, here I am in the presence of God. I don't think that's realistic to expect that to happen. But how about just in the general sense? We have confidence to enter the most holy place. Not the fake one. It wasn't really, fake is the wrong word. Not the copy one, I guess. Fake is, that's too strong. But by a new and living way. Now, this next passage, this is one of those, how do you interpret it? It says, by a new and living way for us open through the curtain that is his body. All right, now I hate to do a sort of a technical scholarly thing on you here, but there's two interpretations here. So we have a living way through his body. Let me see. We have a living way through the curtain that is his body, or we have a living way through the curtain that is his body. All right. All right. In other words, his body is a way through the curtain. That or his body is the curtain that we have a way through. That's the two interpretations. I apologize that there's two of them. So we have a way through the curtain which is, remember, the thing that separates us from God, and that is the body of Jesus. All right, that is the body of Jesus. In other words, the death of Jesus gives us access. Because you know, when he died, the curtain was split in two. Other people say, no, his body was the curtain. And as long as he wore that body, then the way was not open. And when he gave up his body, then the way was open. But you know what? I don't care. It's one of those two. How about both? Here's the point. We have access. That's the point. Let's not worry about that. All right? We have access by a new and living way. Now, he says it was a new and living way because in the year 60-something A.D., it was literally a new and living way. It was new. I mean, the people who originally received this letter, they were alive. A lot of them were alive when the way was opened. It was brand new for them. For us, it's not quite as new. It's been a couple thousand years. But either way, Jesus has opened the way through his body. So what should we do about that? Well, what we should do about that is we should draw near. We should enjoy intimate fellowship with God and with a clear conscience. I remember, this is kind of a dumb story, but I remember one time, I think my brother and sister are taking a bath, and my mother said, "Don't you go in there. Don't you go in there." And of course I did, obviously. Yeah. And I'm in there and it's all slipping, boom, and I split my chin open, it's bleeding, all this kind of stuff. And I was so worried. I was so worried I'd get in so much trouble. So my parents are downstairs and I'm kind of pouring like this and I'm kind of walking through like that and the blood is all leaking out, you know. And when my parents thought about, oh, I'm in so much trouble. But my parents, they couldn't care less about the fact that I'd gone in there and broken the rule, that I was bleeding and I had to get stitches and stuff like that. All right, what does that have to do with this passage I'm reading? I don't know. Let us draw near with full assurance. Oh yeah. Having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience. That's why we can walk confidently into the presence of God. Because we don't have a guilty conscience, but then some of us do, you know. That's the problem. Some of us still do. And why would we have a guilty conscience? Because we're guilty. So, you know, and we're not good people. But you know what? Jesus declared us not guilty, and he declared us good people. And so we need to essentially accept that. You know, kind of a theme verse for the year, if we can hold on to this. I don't know, remember, I want to know Christ, right? That's our sort of our New Year's resolution, right? I want to know Christ. And how do we do that? Well, by taking this admonition here in Hebrews 10:19 through 22, which is drawing near to God. Let us draw near to God. We have access. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that you have access? Now, the next slide, salad time. This is salad time. Let us.
No.
Let us. All right, let us draw near to God. Let us hold to our confession of hope. Let us be concerned about one another. Let us not stop meeting together, and let us encourage one another. We got a lot of let us's, all right? In other words, let us means do this. Do this. Folks, do these things. But I don't want to. Do them anyway. All right? Do them. Because that's part of Hebrews, right? Part of Hebrews is, wow, Jesus is amazing. It's great. But part of Hebrews is like, dude and dudette, person here this morning, just do these things. Please, do these things. First of all, it is draw near to God. Let me read verse 23 through 25, which is the rest of our salad. And I understand we are having a salad this morning. And there's more than just lettuce in there. There's also, we should, and I don't know, other things. Okay. All right. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess. In other words, let's believe what we say we believe, essentially. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promises faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. So we have a few let us's here. Number one, let us hold to our confession of hope without wavering. You know, God is faithful. God is going to do his part of the bargain. Remember in Hebrews 6:18, it says, I swear. He's not kidding. He says, by two unchangeable things, which is God himself and his word, you know, you are in like flint. Got to be really old to know what in like flint means, but that's an expression from a movie back in the 1960s. You know, the world has no hope. They have no hope. Eat, work, sleep, eat, work, sleep, eat, work, sleep, die. That's not much hope. But in Christ we have eternal hope. And basically the admonition this morning is just hold on to that. Remember that. Grab onto it. But you know, every once in a while, verse 24, we lose hope, right? Let's be honest about it. I was up on campus and we had a great day. Zane and I had a great day on Wednesday sharing with a zillion people. We had a lot of really good conversations, got a lot of numbers. Then Thursday I got on campus at Merced College and it was freezing and I was freezing my butt off. And I mean, it was windy. It was like 48 degrees and there is nobody there. I mean, I was sharing with the grass. And I was out there for an hour and a half, and after about 40 minutes, I was thinking, I want to go home. I did not have a lot of hope in that moment. I just wasn't feeling it, man. Like, what are we doing here? You know, we haven't had any baptisms yet. What are we doing here? This is crazy. People, we're crazy. All right. So he gives us some more admonitions. He says, let us consider how we may spur one another towards love and good deeds. You know what? We need a lot of encouragement. I don't know about you. I need encouragement. On Thursday afternoon, I needed some encouragement. And I'm sure some of us do as well. And so he says here, let us consider. Not let us just, oh, if it hits you, encourage somebody. All right? It says, let us consider. Let's plan. Let's plan it out. Write letters. Send emails. Oh, how about calling somebody instead of emailing them or texting them? All right? We need to encourage people. We need encouragement. Because otherwise, you know, he did say in verse 23, let us hold unswervingly to the hope that we have. Okay, great. That works often. But it doesn't work all the time. That's why we have church. You know, we're here to worship God, definitely. But we're also here to be encouraged and to encourage. And you know what it says? It goes around and comes around. I don't know about you. I need to be encouraged, but I have no control over that. I have absolutely no control over whether somebody encourages me. I guess I could write him a note and say, please encourage me. That just, I don't know, please give me a Christmas present. It just doesn't work that way. So how's it work?
You can ask somebody.
No. The way it works is you just give a lot of encouragement.
You say, hey, bro, I'm having a down day. Can I?
All right. Yeah, there you go. There's
being open, being honest.
All right. That's true. That's a, you got a good point. But you're messing up my point. That's a really, really good point. It's a really, really good point. But you're messing up my point which is if you want to be encouraged, you just, you have no control over that. Maybe a little bit of control over it. Thank you very much for reminding me of that. But the point is, we just need to do an encouraging, right? It's more blessed to give than to receive, right? But it's also kind of blessed to receive, but if somebody's got to do some giving and somebody's got to do some taking, all right? That's how it works. And he says, and let us not give up meeting together. Okay? Hey, you guys need to be in church. Well, I mean, you know, it's the wrong audience for this admonition here. All right? But actually, you know, this week we had Bible talk on Tuesday night. Monica was there. We had, midweek on Wednesday night, Monica was there. We had game night on Friday night, Monica was there. We had roller skating on Saturday morning, Monica was there. And she was so tired, she had to sleep for 16 hours. But you know what? That's a great example. That's a great example. And, you know, we had church last Sunday, and Daniel was there. He was there, Bible talk Tuesday night. He was there midweek Wednesday night. You know, we probably had too many meetings this week. It's, you know, we have the, what do we call it, rush week. It's, you know, we don't do that every week.
I couldn't do Monday.
But you know what? Folks, we need to be there. Mm-hmm. We need to be there. And I'm not trying to lay a guilt trip on somebody who missed a meeting this week. That's not what I'm trying to do. But the bottom line is, we're talking about making it to heaven. We're talking about making it to heaven. So what have we learned so far? Well, we need to draw near to God. We need to remember the hope and cling on to it. But then we need to get encouragement, which means we need to encourage. And bottom line is, we need to go to church. We need to come together when we can. And that's not a, you're in trouble if you don't, right? This is an encouragement to do it. We're not here to guilt people up, but we are here to say that that's what we need. And he says, let us not give up the habit of meeting, but instead encouraging one another. So he's encouraging again. So let's just do a little, you know, little assessment of yourself today. Who did you encourage this week? Yeah, don't raise your hand and don't share it. All right, Tanya, go ahead. We got a small enough group, we can actually do this.
Well, okay, just that we have our little Bible talk that meets on Wednesday night. And somebody didn't make it, and so I reached out to her, and she asked if we could meet. Have our own individual meeting, and it actually went for over an hour, and it was really good because she really needed to talk to somebody, like, and hadn't talked to anybody, and was very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I was just really glad because honestly, I forgot we even had a meeting set up, and then at the last minute, my phone alerts me. And I'm so glad we did it because she really needed it. And it encouraged me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, right. So a good example. Perfect. So again, a little self-assessment. You know, who do you encourage this week? Who did you call just to call? I like to do that. If you know me long enough, eventually you get a call from me saying, by the way, just, you know, I have no reason for calling you. I'm just calling you. I get very, very, very few of those phone calls. Almost none. Maybe one in 6 months practically. And I appreciate them. Like, what's his name from Bakersfield gave me a call. Remember you said, why did he call you? I said, just because he calls me sometimes. That's really great. All right. So, and it says, all the more as you see the day approaching. I don't know about, we're closer to the day than they were back then. They were at least 2,000 years away. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's coming, all right? It's coming. All right, we're going to skip down to verse 32 through 39. We're going to finish out chapter 10. All right, 32 through 39, because we already did 26 through 31, which was pretty intense stuff. We already did that, though. All right, so here we go. Yes. Remember, verse 32, remember those earlier days after you received the light. Now, by the way, this is for the older Christians. So you younger Christians, this is not really for you. You can read it. It's cool. But this is actually for the older Christians. Okay? Remember those earlier days after you received the light when you endured in great conflict, full of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times, you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You suffered along with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you'll receive what he's promised. For in just a little while, just a little while, he who is coming will come and he will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith, which is the next whole chapter of Hebrews 11, correct? And I take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back, but we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and who are saved. All right, so he says, you know, to these older Christians, you've been running good race. He says, just don't throw it away. What a terrible mistake. And, you know, he's saying, you know, remember when you were a young Christian, when you realized you had better promises than what the world had to offer. And we tend to forget, you know, life kind of wears us out. That's the honest truth. Life just kind of wears us out. We kind of run out of energy. I don't know why Monica is being used as an example. Yesterday, she just flat ran out of energy. She went to sleep and then woke up 16 hours. Amen for her. All right. Has anybody here ever thought about giving up? The older Christians, have you ever thought about giving up? Have you ever thought about that? Chances are, maybe you have. He says, don't throw your life away. It's like our son Ben, who bought a car and, you know, silly young person, it got towed and it was going to be $500 to get it out of whatever, Jen, whatever, $500 to get it out. And he didn't have the money. So you know what his plan was? Just to let him keep the car. We're like, you spent like $5,000 already on this car, and because you owe $500, you're going to let him keep the car? Wow. That's really dumb. That's so guess what we did? We paid the whatever it was. It may not have been five, whatever it was. But, you know, that's just an illustration. That's just an illustration. I mean, you guys have kind of done a lot already. And God, like you said earlier in chapter 6, God is not going to forget. You know, sometimes it takes a little bit of endurance. He says, remember the start that you had. All right. Now, Hebrews 12. But I'll get into Hebrews 12, which I'm planning on doing. Okay. So Hebrews 12. Now we're starting our sermon. Hebrews 12. All right. Yeah, that was just the appetizer. All right, Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. Therefore, we have another therefore. Now the first therefore, remember that first therefore? Mm-hmm. The first therefore was because of the sacrifice and the covenant and all that sort of stuff. This therefore is Hebrews 11. Therefore, given that Gideon and Jephthah and Barak and Samson and Moses and Joshua and Abraham and Noah and Esther, given that they stayed faithful to the end, and they didn't even have the Bible in some cases, or certainly not the New Testament, and not the church, and the prophecies fulfilled, and the opportunity to have the Holy Spirit live in them, if they could do it, so we're about to get our... Now, by the way, final admonitions is Hebrews 12. Hebrews 10 was not final admonitions. Hebrews 12 is final admonitions. And he's not going to say, let us, in this chapter, but he might as well say, let us, because it's basically a bunch of let us's. Is that the plural of lettuce? The plural of lettuce is lettuce. But if let us, not let us, but let us, the plural of let us is lettuce is. It is. It's as of right now, it is, because I said so. Okay, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great crowd, see, that's why it's the therefore. Since we're surrounded by these witnesses who made it, who crossed the finish line, They crossed the finish line. They made it. They did it. All right. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. There you go. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. We've heard that before, right? Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. We've heard that before as well. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning the shame. And he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Because guess what? You're going to grow weary and you're going to lose heart. So advice for perseverance. And he's giving us a few advices. If lettuces is the plural of lettuce, then advices is the plural of advice, right? I think so. All right. It says, so we're going to fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter, the pioneer, the archagon, the trailblazer, the one who already did it, and the perfecter, the completer, the one who completed. He started the journey, he went through the journey, and he ended the journey. So we have, and I don't know if that's Daniel Boone, or it's one of those pioneers there. That's supposed to be Jesus, because he's the pioneer of our faith. All right, great. So we have a bunch of advices. First of all, he says, we have to throw off everything that hinders you. So what's hindering you right now? Okay. Now, I was going to say, don't raise your hand, but as soon as I do, then Tanya will raise her hand. She was about to. She was about to. This is not Bible talk. This is sermon. But it's just, you know, you can, you know, it's okay. You can just jump right in there. It's cool. We're an intimate little group here. But... all right, what's hindering you? Is it your job? Is it your lack of a job? Is it a particular sin? In the context, I think most people preach this sermon, they would be thinking of a particular sin is the most likely thing that we might think of in this case. Is it a relationship that is dragging you down or pulling you away from Christ? Is it a bitterness towards somebody, which is going to come up later in this chapter, a bitterness towards somebody that you haven't let go of? What's hindering you? And his advice is just take that thing and throw it off. You know? And it says, and then look at Jesus. Right? Because, you know, life is a lot more like a marathon than a sprint. Everybody knows that. And I've never run a marathon, but I've run some half marathons. And all I know is, you know, mile 8, mile 9, mile 10. But when you get to mile 12, it's like, oh, I think I can do it. You know, another example would be when I was doing my PhD, because people would say, how long before you're finished? I said, another couple of years. And for like 3 or 4 years, I said, another couple of years. You know, it's just another couple of years, because that's unlike with an undergraduate program. You get X credits done and you're out of here, right? It doesn't work that way. Somebody says to you, sure, you've now done enough research and you know, and that sort of thing. And, But there's just something about having the finish line in front of us. Well, the finish line is there. It's there. All right, I was saying to the guy who's working on a roof yesterday, it says it's a 30-year roof, right? It's a 30-year roof. I said, well, I'm going to be dead in 30 years, so that's all I care about. I don't need a 40-year roof. I just need a 30-year roof. 40-year roof, whatever. I don't care about that. Now, some of you guys, you'll probably be still around in 40 years, but, you know, we need to fix our eyes on Jesus. We need to understand there's a goal out there. We need to keep our eyes on the goal. That goal is Jesus, but it's also heaven, right? Yep. It says Jesus, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. I'm guessing being on the cross was not exactly a fun experience. In fact, I'm guessing it was beyond horror. I mean, can you imagine? What? But you know what? Jesus knew that there was going to be an end to it. All right, what if he would have been on that cross forever? Okay, and we need to understand that. We need to keep our eyes fixed on the fact that this race is got a pretty good ending. It's a lot better than the ending. I mean, that's nice. You know, that's nice. They broke the tape there. That's pretty cool. But what about breaking the tape in heaven? What's it going to be like when you're like, holy shaboli? I think that's what Jews say when they cross the thing there. That's probably Yiddish, shamoli, holy shamoli. I don't know. Oy vey, I don't know. It's like, wow! I made it! I made it! Pretty good. We were at the basketball game last night and they gave out the award for, I don't know, the conference champion to the women. That's pretty cool. You know, I guess you seem or said women won their conference. Great. Men, they were fired up. All right, I'm fired up. But you know what? I don't think that's going to last them for the next 40 years of awesomeness. I don't think so. They said, yeah, I'll always have the ring. Can't take it away from you. Well, actually, you know, when you die, you probably can't take it with you. I wasn't going to stand up and say that at the time, but you know, that's pretty awesome. But folks, there's a finish line out there. And it's not that far away. It's close. Well, all right, yeah, it's too close, that's true. It reminds me of the Sunday school teacher who said to her students, children, how many of you want to go to heaven? And all the kids raised their hand except one. And said, Johnny, you don't want to go to heaven? He said, not now. Yeah, too close. All right, I get it. I mean, I admit, I'm not like wanting to die tomorrow. But I'm telling you, it's out there. Run with perseverance. Throw off everything that hinders, whatever that is. Hopefully you did your little mental checklist. What is that that's hindering you? You know what it is. Throw it off. Fix your eyes on Jesus and run with perseverance. And point number four, consider the joy, right? Who for the joy set before him? Like I said, it was tough on the cross. And he realized that within couple of hours, or even a few minutes, all the sins of the world were going to be on him. And he's there, oh man, but I'm going to be at the Father's right hand. We have something to consider. How do we run with perseverance the race? By remembering the joy that's set before us. And then, let me see. Let's read. Let me see. Am I ready there? Look at Jesus, right? Look at Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter. And then he says, and he scorned the shame, right? It says, scorning the shame or despise. Some translation says he despised the shame. All right, because there's people that are not going to appreciate it. I got an email. It came in this morning. This person saying, you're a liar and just saying all this stuff about me and blah, blah, blah. It's like, ugh. All right. But then I'm like, this guy is just an angry person. You know, I might even have, it was something I published that was actually not completely, there might have been a little bit of a mistake in there, so I'd probably go ahead and correct my mistake there, but that was pretty tough. I mean, he was not happy with me. And so Jesus, he looked at what people are doing with him. He looked at the cross, and he says, the people, they were scorning him. Oh, you who is going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Save yourself. Yeah. All right. And when we're sharing our faith on campus, we get a few weird looks and people saying stuff, but basically saying, just look at that for what it is. It's coming from people that are not doing too well. And either way, we need to consider Jesus on the cross. You know, I lost my job. True, but Jesus died on the cross. You know, man, I'm sick. Yeah, but Jesus got executed. You know, I'm having a hard time. You know, I failed this course. I tried hard and I failed this course. Yeah, but Jesus, he got crucified. I don't know. Consider that, you know. Later on, he's going to say, you've not yet been persecuted to the point of shedding your blood. I mean, have a little bit of perspective. You know, we get some persecution, but, you know, it's not killing you or something like that. Let me read this last section for our sermon today. All right, which is Hebrews 12, 4 through 12. Then we'll be done. In your struggle against sin, you've not yet resisted the point of shedding blood. Like I said, scorning its shame. Alright, and have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, my son or daughter, do not make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves and he chastens everyone who he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children, for what children are not disciplined by their father? If you're not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, right? Then you're not legitimate and not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we've all had human fathers who disciplined us and we respected them for it. Now, Monica's students didn't appreciate she was disciplining them last week, and one of them told her that she hates her, but later on we assured Monica that that student will like her and will appreciate the fact that she got disciplined, right? How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines for us for our own good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. All right, so we've already seen, throw off the things that hinder you, run with perseverance, fix your eyes on Jesus, consider the joy, scorn the shame. Next is accept hardship as loving discipline. We won't get to point 7 in that outline. I thought I might, but we won't. All right, and so there's going to be hardship. God didn't say it's all puppies and strawberry cream and, and Hershey's Kisses or whatever. We need to accept hardship as discipline from a loving God. And it's not like you're supposed to say, this is so awesome, you know, having my tire go flat, having somebody get in my car, yep, having my daughter hate on me, or, you know, whatever the situation is. You know, it's not like this is fun and exciting and awesome, but we just need to understand that God allows these things to happen. He loves us. And you know, it's interesting. Of the things he talks about in Hebrews, he kind of goes on and on and on and on and on about this discipline thing. It's surprising, like all these verses about this. So it must be that he knows that we're going to have struggles, and we're going to struggle with having struggles, right? He says, you need to endure hardship because those who came before you, those great cloud of witnesses, they had it worse than you did. They had it way worse than you did. Number one. Number two, Jesus had it way worse than you did. Yeah. And number three, it's maybe not quite as bad as you really actually think. You know, it's not like you're shedding blood. Nobody has, you know, held a gun to your head and say, deny Jesus or I pull the trigger. You know, that hasn't quite happened yet. All right. And plus, you got to understand, that's what loving fathers do. All right. And so that's part of the deal. Part of making it faithful is understanding that there is going to be hard stuff. So there's a few attitudes you can have towards discipline. You can accept it with resignation and say, yeah, I know. I'm supposed to have a good attitude about it. And, you know, he could do that. Nice. Or he could do a accept it and to get over it as soon as possible. All right. All right. It's going to happen. So I'm just going to get, you know, hopefully it's going to get better soon. Yes, it's going to get better soon or something like that. Or you could say, oh, woe is me. Man, that brother over there, that sister over there, they haven't had nearly as much. Nobody understands me. I mean, I've got it so bad. And, you know, man, I'm telling you, if people really knew what I was going through, then they would just stop everything they're doing and just come over to my house and console me. And they would, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, or you could say, well, you know, I just deserve that. I'm a bad person. Some of us are the accused type. Some of us are the deceived type. I'm not that type, honestly. I never figure I deserve anything bad, but some of us just feel are guilt ridden. So that we take discipline as God's angry at us. Yeah. Or he's out to get us. Or we could accept it as what it is. First of all, part of life. Second of all, it's not evidence that God doesn't love you. In fact, it's evidence that God does love you. Oh, where's the slide that my summary? Oh, I had this excellent summary slide. Oh no. It was so good. Summary of my whole sermon. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to have to do it on the fly then. Okay. Here we go. All right. So the thing is, the reason I do this is because we actually covered a lot today. It's like it was shotgun. It was a bit of a shotgun sermon. And so nobody's going to take something from every point that I made. That's impossible. There's like 6 points or 7 points. All right. So hopefully when I go through it, oh yeah, that's the one. That's the one. All right. That's the one thing he said. That's the one. So we said a few things. All right. We said, number one, let us draw near to God. Maybe that's what you need to hear this morning. We have access. We have access not to the Oval Office, but to the Holy of Holies. That's the first thing. And the second thing was, let's encourage people. Let's go to as many meetings of the church as we possibly can. And let's spur each other on. And let's make absolutely sure that we are not going to give up. We've come way too far. We've come way too far. And let's throw off the things that hinder us, whatever that is. Instead, let's look at Jesus. Let's remember what awaits us. The light at the end of the tunnel, it's there. It's closer than you think. Daniel says, hopefully not too close, but either way, it's closer than you think. And as far as the stuff the world does to you, it's just a bunch of stuff. And, you know, when we go through our stuff, we need to understand that that's a natural part of life. And it is not evidence that God's forgotten you. Far from it. It's because God loves you. All right, so that's this, our sermon for today, and we're going to finish out Hebrews next Sunday. That'll be great. And then I believe next we're going to go to Ezekiel.
Let's do it.
Should be good. All right, so we're going to have a song,
yep.
And then Tanya is going to do the Lord's Supper for us.
Wow.
Pretty good.
That was pretty good, Daniel. Something like that.
Alrighty.